I ended up losing like $1.3 million. I was like almost shot at. I was chased on the Grand Central. I mean, which story would you like to hear?
Oh my God.
Where are we going?
Into the disorderly minds of TWU. Broadcasting from Long Island, New York, it's the Warm Up Podcast.
What's up, guys? It's Danny from the Warm Up Podcast. I'm with Tony Mass and Waleezy. We are in studio with a very special guest. She is an entrepreneur, and more importantly, she's a food truck owner and makes some of the best pizza on Long Island. It's Josie from Josie's Pizza Bar. What's going on?
How are you guys?
I gotta ask right out of the gate, are you from Long Island?
No, I'm originally from Bayside, Queens. I grew up in Bayside, yeah.
Gotcha. I'm always super intrigued to talk to people who are in the pizza world, especially people from Long Island and New York. How did you get your first start within pizza? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh my God, how much time do we have?
It's like,
so it's a funny story. I actually had a best friend whose father was like a serial entrepreneur. He used to take us to all of his restaurants and pizzerias almost every night. Like, we used to go with him and he used to stop into his places and collect money and whatnot. And I kind of just fell in love with the business. Like, I fell in love with like the hustle and bustle of the city. You know, we would help him out. We would put like forks and knives on the table. I would fill up sodas. Like, I fell in love with that atmosphere. And I was like, I know what I want to do for the rest of my life. I did like a semester or two in college. I fooled around. I was there like wasting time. And I was like, all right, this is not for me. Like, school's not for me. I know what I want to do. I got to get my foot in the door. And I started working for a pizzeria in Astoria. And then 2 years later, I opened up on the Upper East Side. And I was a little bit shy of 21.
Wow.
Did you open up the truck at that time? Or you went right into brick and mortar?
Went right into a storefront.
Okay.
Yeah. The truck didn't come until much later on. Yeah, previously.
So you're 21 years old. And it's a good story just for you as being successful. Is like, we, especially our generation, I'm assuming we're around the same age.
Yeah.
I have got a lot of gray hairs.
I think so.
we were kind of brought up in this era of you need to go to school and college as like that's what success means. And now we're starting to learn, especially in a digital world and a mobile world, that there are so many other options for people to be very successful and independent.
Listen, my parents were not happy. Let me tell you, I come from a very traditional Italian household. My parents are both immigrants, came here on boat, not by plane. Like, my dad tells the story about a dollar in a dream, like he had a dollar in his pocket, you know, and he's very successful now, has a business. And they were both like, you have to go to school. You have to. Like, there is no ifs, ands, or buts. And I was like, I don't really want to. Like, what is school going to teach me? It's not going to teach me how to make a pizza. It's not going to teach me how to, you know what I mean? And so for me, the experience hands-on was much better than going to school, you know?
Yeah.
To be in that business, you have to be in it to learn it.
No degree.
Like you said, you got to kind of immerse yourself in that process. From a parent's perspective, especially you said that you have immigrant parents, I feel like they probably just wanted the most sure thing type of situation, just, you know, out of love and just protection.
Yeah, they didn't have an education, you know? So for them, that's sacred. You know, they wanted their kids to have like a degree and go to college and maybe be a lawyer or a doctor. And I was like, nope, I want to flip pizzas for a living. And my dad, being traditional Italian, was like, you want to do what? Like, no, you're a woman. Like, you can't do that. That's what he said, you know? Like, he's like, absolutely not. Get married, have kids, and then figure. I'm like, what? No. Yeah. You know, they see me, I'm, thank God, knock on wood, like, everything's been okay. I'm successful. Mm-hmm. But they still worry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, this business is so risky, right? And it keeps changing by the day, I feel like. Like, if I remember, like, you know, 13 years ago, what it was like, it's nothing like that today.
Yeah.
And it's hard to own your own business. And so they're constantly worrying. You know what I'm saying? Like, we have it today, we might not have it tomorrow. And so for them, it was like, you know, go to college, get a degree, you know, be in a job where like you get a paycheck and it's a sure thing. And
stability.
And yeah. Security. They're so proud of me. At the same time, they worry. You know, like, it's not, it's risky. Having a business is definitely risky.
I feel like just parents in general, the worry just never shuts off. But I'm sure that, like you said, they are proud of you. They've seen the progress. But I'm interested. So you started with the storefront, right? The brick and mortar. Yeah. Yes. Tell us about the timeline of things.
So I can't tell you years because I'm all over the place, right? So I was a little bit shy of 21 and I opened up. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Rizzo's Pizza. It's on Steinway Street. The original is on Steinway Street in Astoria.
Okay.
Really well-known pizzeria, has been there for like 50 years. I started there as a phone girl in Astoria. And then I worked my way up. And then about 2 years later, me and my best friend, who was managing at the time, we opened up Rizzo's Pizza on the Upper East Side. So I was a little bit shy of 21. You know, it's crazy in hindsight to think now, like I was a baby. You know, yeah, like I'm on the Upper East Side, but I knew the business. I learned it, you know, in those 2 years. And we opened up and everything was great. And then the landlord sold to a different person. The taxes started rising. They refinanced it. Like there are things that you start learning. And then I'm like, oh, well, we're a slice shop. We're probably not going to make it, you know? And that was scary for me. And then about 3 years in, I decided to sell my partnership. Around that time, I also got really sick. So I was like, you know, I couldn't give time to the business.
Your health came first, obviously.
My health came first, right? You know, I usually don't talk about this, but I was born with a really rare form of kidney disease. Mm. So around that time that I wanted to sell my partnership and I saw things were like kind of declining, I also got sick at that time. Oh, so geez. It was like, yeah, it was terrible. Sold my partnership, lost some money. So that was rough for me, right? Because that was my first business.
Yeah.
And it's like, I didn't know what to do after that. I was like, what do I do?
And the combination of health and business, it's like a lot of your worlds are just getting rattled at that point. You're just, you made the decision, I need to reset
right.
business and health and yeah. chug along.
Yeah. And so I was like, I'm going to take a little break, right? I'm going to get my health back on point, whatever. And I was really devastated when I decided to sell my partnership. Like it was my first business. I was so excited when I opened, you know what I'm saying? It was a huge part of my life.
Did you get along with those people or?
I did. But towards the end, it was a little bit sour. Yeah. And so I was dealing with that as well, yeah. right? And so I was like, I need a little bit of a break. My mother at the time saw kind of like the depression, like the decline with me. And she was like, hey, listen, you know, her sister lives out in California, has this really like just huge successful restaurant. She was like, go out there, one-way ticket, like get yourself together, work with my sister, learn the business more. And then when you're ready to come back, come back. And that was like probably the best thing I ever did. I stayed out there for like 6 months. Came Christmas and I was like, yeah, it's 80 degrees here. And Christmas, like, I got to get back to New York.
I was just going to ask you. I was like,
oh my God. Like, if it's not snowing,
right,
it doesn't cold, like, it's not Christmas.
Exactly.
I believe you're a true New Yorker. You like need your seasons.
I belong in New York. Like, yeah. I'm a true New Yorker. Yeah. You know, love Cali. Shout out to Cali.
Yeah.
But I love New York.
And it's also great, like, get out of your comfort zone and yeah. learn those new things about yourself and the business.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't want to go. I like was gritting my teeth. I didn't want to go. It healed me in a way, you mm-hmm. know, and then I learned so much. And I remember talking to my dad on the phone and he was like, all right, are you ready to come back home and like open a restaurant up? And I was like, I think I am, you know. So went back to New York, took a little bit of time, looked around, and then eventually ended up opening a restaurant in New Hyde Park. It was like a pizzeria restaurant. Listen, I didn't cook in California. I just watched the cooks.
Yeah.
Cook, you know, so I really had no idea how to cook. I'm going to be honest. Like I had to like watch YouTubes and wing it. Like I took over a business that was already established and running. So I watched those chefs and what they were doing, you know? And really I was self-made. There was nobody that taught me mm-hmm. how to cook.
Like, yeah.
Nobody taught me how to cook a chicken marsala. We're not cooking chicken marsala at my house. Like that's not really, like my mom is very authentic. We're not cooking chicken marsala.
Yeah.
So I had to learn that as I went along. And I did that for a few years.
I just picture, I mean, you're talking to someone who literally is probably a 1 out of 10 in terms of any culinary experience or just like skill. Is there lumps that go along with it, like cooking, having people try, getting that feedback, resetting, to get it to the level that you seem like someone who is super passionate about it, that kind of level, how long did that take for you?
So here's the thing, like me and my brother, when I opened the restaurant, me and my older brother, we went into business together. And he's a huge numbers guy, right? So it was either we buy something and we start it from scratch, or we buy something that's already established, the numbers are there, and we just kind of tweak it a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what we did. We bought into an established business, but we quickly realized that the customer base, they didn't want anything to change. Mm. And so I couldn't get creative at all. Like if we tweak something, they knew right away and they were like, absolutely not.
Damn.
So yeah. So for me, you know, I love being in that business and I love the restaurant, but like I got bored.
Wasn't scratching that itch.
I got creative itch. How many times can you make a regular pie with mushrooms on top. Like, yeah. I was so bored.
At that point, you're working, like, in an assembly line of just monotonous. And, like, at the end of the day, you like it. But, like you said, part of you got into this business for the creativity of it.
Right, so, correct. Yeah. And so, I, you know, my brother, eventually, I bought him out. And I maybe spent another year there. And I was like, okay, like, this is really not for me. Like, I need to be creative. Yeah. Like, if I'm not being creative, I'm bored. I don't want to do it, right? And so, I ended up selling the restaurant. And I took some time for myself because I was like, you can't just buy and sell. You know what I'm saying?
It's a big transaction. It's emotional investment. And there's, you know, a lot of things that are coming and going. So
yeah. Even though I was bored, it was scary to sell my business. Potentially I could lose money, maybe break even. Like, you know, how am I going to start again? I need to find the money. But I was burnt out at the end of that process.
And it's something you like. It's an industry you love. But the actual product is not something you love. Like, if you were creating something and being creative every night and changing the menu and changing recipes, maybe that grind would have been worth it. But when you're doing something that you're not really into, and
it was like
putting that much time and effort into
it. It was somebody else's recipe that I was doing, and I had to keep up with that. And I was just like, this sucks. Yeah. Like, this is not mine. Like, I can't tweak it. Like, people are not okay with that. You know, obviously you open a business to make money, but you have to also like what you're doing, love what you're giving out. Like, I didn't feel connected to it.
Yeah.
You know, like I didn't feel connected to it. And so at the end, I just felt like so burnt out, so disgusted with just business in general. Like, I needed a lot of time. I ended up, which is crazy. This is going to be a funny story. I ended up saying, you know what? I need out of the food business. Like, I was at that point where I was like, I can't do this anymore. You know, like, I think the restaurant really just ran me thin. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, I can't do this. Like, I just can't. And so you guys are going to laugh at this. I ended up opening up a nightclub.
That's sick. I have so many questions.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
I have so many questions.
It was absolutely insane. It was probably the worst decision of my life. Worst investment, worst decision. I don't advise anybody to do it. This investment for me was purely financial. Like, I didn't love running a nightclub. Mm. Like, I'm not that type of person.
Yeah.
It came across my desk as like a good investment. Like, hey, run it for a year, sell it at its peak. Nightclubs make crazy money. And then, you know, go back into the food business. It was a really short run. And a lot of money. And I was just like, what just happened? It was like I blinked and it was over. It was absolutely insane.
Did you have like a fun like opening night?
Yes. So opening night was, it went really well, actually. Okay. We were packed house. It was great. But a lot of people think like, oh my God, owning a nightclub must be so fun. And it's like,
well, you're not partying. You're working.
I think that's what people think. People think like you're partying, but it's like, you're not partying. You have to deal with drunk people all the time. It's very risky, very dangerous.
And there's alcohol and people involved. It's like,
that time of night, I need to hear like one crazy story from that short run.
Oh my God. It was so insane. I mean, which one do you want to hear? I mean, I was like almost shot at. I was chased on the Grand Central. I mean, which story would you like to hear?
Oh, my God.
Absolutely insane. Like, and no words, right?
You said, like, someone, you know, cleaning up puke or something along those lines.
No, you would think. Glass.
You were in imminent danger.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
That's not
Listen, when you're dealing with drunk people and you're dealing with people who, I mean, I'm a girl, right? I'm 120 pounds soaking wet. People notice that and they think you're walking out with, like, buckets of money. And so there's always that one person that keeps an eye on you.
Damn.
You know? Yeah. I mean, security had to follow me home when I would get in my car in the morning because my hours are crazy. Like, I was there
5 or 6 a.m.
Oh my God. I was sleeping during the day, working graveyard shift. I would be there at 8 p.m. I wouldn't leave until 9 a.m. the next morning, if I was lucky. And they would actually stop traffic on Steinway for me to get in my car. Like, it's a risky business. I was like, I'm done. I started to have a problem with the landlord. Something started to come up. You start learning things. Like, there was a gas violation when I bought the building. And the landlord was like, I'll take care of it, no problem. He never did. And so guess what? in the winter, it was freezing, and nobody wants to party in freezing cold nightclub.
And so, like, what's the next step? You would have to, like, take legal action, pretty
correct.
Much?
Correct. So we basically sued each other, and it became, like, a whole big fiasco.
Yeah.
Like, I'm over this.
Yeah.
And it's so bad to say, right, because I spend so much money. But when you're going through a legal battle with your landlords, it's not a fun situation, and it's very expensive, and... you know, some other things happened. Like, he locked me out illegally. Like, it became a whole big thing.
Oh, my God.
And I was just like, it's not worth it. My attorney sat me down and was like, listen, you got to just take the loss. Like, just eat the loss. Like, do you want to keep paying me to go to court? Like, just eat the loss. Like, just be done. Walk away. And that's essentially what I did. But I ended up losing a lot of money.
Yeah.
I ended up losing, like, $1.3 million.
Oh.
Yeah.
Damn.
And when I was done with that, I was like, my career is over.
Yeah.
I'm 30 years old. My career is over. Like, what was I thinking? I just lost this money. And I was like, why did I go into the, like, I should have just stayed in food. Like, what was I thinking?
I've read a lot of stories of famous entrepreneurs, restaurateurs, Thomas Keller, like one of the best chefs of all time. Like, everyone goes through these.
Yeah, they fail
these multiple times to get you to. It's kind of a learning. Like, I don't like this. I could do this way. And you sort of navigate to that pinnacle of what becomes the best success story.
I always say, like, I don't think success ever comes until you fail.
Yeah.
I think it just changes your whole world and your whole mindset. I took, you know, the money I had or the loans that I took that for granted. In hindsight, I feel like I did. Like, once I lost all of that money and it was done for me, I was like, there is no more money. Like, you know, banks deemed me irresponsible. I owed all this money. Companies wouldn't work with me. Although I didn't do it on purpose.
It happened.
It happened. Yeah. And that's what it was, you know. And I fell on my ass and I was like, what do I do? I didn't have a dollar to my name. Couldn't put gas in my car. Like, that bad. And I had to figure it out. I went through a bad depression after that. I don't know who I am if I'm not a business owner. Like, what do I do?
That's your identity. That's like your pride.
But something you were sort of looking to do your whole life and then did from 20 years old, and a lot of people are still partying in college. Like, you started doing that and you did it for 10 years up to that point.
I know. I wasn't a functional human being until like 4 years ago. And the fact that you like owned a business and almost like, I wonder if it, I mean, you're super smart and like you're driven, but it's just like just the fearlessness of being a little bit naive at that age or.
Yeah. But people ask me like, do you regret it? And I'm like, now in hindsight, I don't, because it made me who I am today. Yeah. Right. Like, I think I wouldn't have what I have today if I didn't go through what I went through the past 14 years. You know what I mean? Like, my mentality has changed. My mindset has changed. The way I view money, the way I view business, the way I view my customers, the way, you know, everything has changed for me. And so, was it naive? Yes. But do I regret it? No.
Yeah.
I had to go through that, I think.
Yeah. It's part of your story. You know, you said you were depressed. I mean, that amount of money, who wouldn't be?
Yeah, it was insane.
And there's been a couple points where you said, all right, well, I can pack it in because this is really bad at this moment, or you can propel yourself up. What is part of your DNA that like picks yourself back up so well?
It's tough. Like, I think, like, for me, I always say, like, the mind is a dangerous place.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you really think about it, like, you know, when they say, like, if you set your mind to it, you could do it. Like, it's a true statement. I spent months in my bed after that, depressed, didn't want to get up. And by the way, I had to pay bills, you know? I had to shut my phone off for like 2 months. There were people calling me. I owed money, right? Like, this whole big thing. And then I said to myself, I have to get up. Like, I have to pay bills. Like, I can't just stay in bed depressed, you know? And so I got up and I got a job. Right. And I went to go work for a pizzeria restaurant in Queens. But it was a shit job. Like, he didn't pay me well. He told me I was overexperienced. But like, I needed money at that point. Like, I had to pay bills. Like, I had no other choice. You know what I'm saying? I was deep frying and crying at the same time. I was like, I can't believe I'm back here.
If you ever start a podcast, deep frying and crying might be the best title.
I need t-shirts.
A book, a podcast, what, a shirt. That's an amazing
menu sound. Item. Like, I'll eat whatever that is.
It was like
deep frying and crying.
I was like bawling my eyes out. I was like deep frying chicken wings. I was like, I don't even know how I got here, you know? And then all right, you can sulk and you can stay in a shit job, but if that's not where you want to be, then you need to really just change your mindset and mm-hmm. say, okay, if I want a pizza truck, if I want a storefront, like, this is what I need to do. And you have to really push yourself to do it. Like, that's basically what happened. The pandemic hit and I was like, I told my boss, I was like, all right, look, I don't know if you're going to stay open or not. I think I'm going to lose my job, right? I was like, my cousin called me. You know, she lives in Florida. She's like, come down here for 2 months and reset. And that's kind of my thing, right? Like, I went to Cali and now I'm going to Florida. And I was like, all right. And I told my boss, I'm like, I'm out, basically. And he was like, I understand. Left to Florida, spent 2 months in the sun, and was like, all right, I got to go back to New York and do something. So
the vitamin D. The vitamin. Healer of all.
I'm telling you something about it. But I think I had to sit with myself. Like, I had to sit in silence and sun and just relax and be like, okay, what do I want to do? And I was like, this is the perfect time to try this crazy concept that I had in the back of my head. And I started Googling pizza ovens, like mobile pizza ovens, and I couldn't find anything. And then finally I came across Fiedo Group, which was Forza Forni at that time. And I was like, this is awesome. They're in Brewster. They're not that far from me.
Upstate, right?
Yeah. And I was like, this is awesome. I'm going to go rent an oven and hit the streets. But there was a problem. I like basically had $500 to my name. Like, so I was like, I don't really know how this is going to work. So I got back to New York. Pandemic was in full effect. I called Fiedo Group and I was like, hey, I'm looking for this mobile oven. They were like, yeah, we have them on the lot. Like, come check them out. Jumped in my car, went to Fiedo Group, got there, and they were like, oh no, we don't have any more. Oh, and I was like, wait, what? The guy was like, all right, hold on. Let's walk the lot and see, like, you know, let's just
something else.
Right. If there's something else, like, and he was like showing me like a freestanding wood fired oven. He was like, just plop this on the sidewalk. Like, he's like, I know some guy who did it. And I was like, yeah, no. Like, I can't be in Brooklyn on the sidewalk with this huge freaking oven. And like,
wood fired oven. Yeah.
How am I supposed to transport this thing? I'm like, no. And it was almost as the stars aligned, like in the cut of this parking lot was this half broken wood fired oven on a hitch. And he was like, oh, well, we have this. Like, we kind of use it every now and then. Like,
so like they're like test oven?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. I think he even forgot it was there, you know? And he was like, well, we have this, but like the propane doesn't work and like this doesn't work. And I was like, I'll take it. Mind you, I've never worked with a wood fired oven before. So we're walking back to the office and I'm thinking in my head, like, oh shit, if he asks me for a security deposit, like, I don't really. Like, these ovens are expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have it, you know? So we're walking back and I'm like, hey, Alex, question for you. Do I have to put a security deposit down? Because now, you know, I'm about to rent this oven every week. And he was like, actually, no. He's like, the owner's not taking any security deposit. And I was like, this is awesome.
Oh my gosh. It's like out of a movie. It's like, we don't have anything but this. And it just pans to the broken one. You like fix it up. And
yeah, it was amazing. And it was like, everything was aligning. And I was like, this is awesome. And he was like, you know, pay at the end of the week. You know, you rent these ovens, pay at the end of the week, whatever. And I was like, all right, this is awesome. And so I was like, I'll pick it up at night. And now I'm picking up an oven. I'm like, where the hell am I going with this thing? I had no plan. I was like, where am I going to put this oven?
Yeah.
So I get on Instagram and I start DMing like all of these breweries, these wineries, like, right? Like, those are the places that might take me. And like 99% of them didn't even answer me back. And so one winery in Red Hook, Brooklyn was like, with open arms, like, yeah, sure. Like 100% we'll have you as a pop-up. Like, come meet me tomorrow. And I was like,
perfect.
Right. Yeah. So I remember like printing out what this oven looked like and just kind of faking the funk. Like, yeah, we've done this. Like, you know, like, yeah, yeah, I've been doing this for a long time, you know, like, and I literally had Costco tables in my parents' garage.
Yeah.
I took the Costco tables. I knew how to make dough, obviously. I made it out of a KitchenAid in my house and just putting together like a really quick pizza menu. I maybe had like four different kinds and I just got to work. I prepared everything the night before and then I hit the road, just kind of winged it. I mean, I knew the basics of working in an oven, right? Yeah. I've never worked with a wood fired oven, but I figured it out. Spent the summer in Red Hook, went really well. And then I was like, where to next? And I found something in Williamsburg. It was like a garage. The guys were really cool and I rented it like per week and we did okay. We did okay. And then my employees were like, listen, I think you would do really well in Oceanside. And I was like, Oceanside? No. Like, no. I was a boroughs girl.
Yeah.
I was very like Bayside, Brooklyn, Astoria. Like, those places have the walking traffic. So when they told me Oceanside, I was like, absolutely not. And they were like, listen, we live there. You would do amazing there. And I gave it some thought. I had a friend who owned a car wash in Oceanside. And so I was like, hey, not sure if this is going to work. And it might sound a little crazy, but I have this oven And he was like all for it. He was so thrilled. He was like, absolutely.
See, that's smart. You set up right next to the car wash?
We were like on the lot of the car wash, but like kind of towards the right. Yeah. So you couldn't see me if you were driving on that road. You can only see me if you like pulled into the car wash. And we were doing okay. And then the guy who owned the car wash, the friend of mine was like, hey, why don't you like literally go street side? Move up.
Cars will actually see you.
Okay. Yeah. And it was a big intersection. And I was like, yeah, I don't know, you know. And he was like, just fucking do it. Yeah. Just do it. Like, stop complaining. Just do it. And I was like, okay. And I swear to you, that day we were like bombarded.
You pretty much now have your own drive-thru.
Pretty much.
Yeah, like yeah. You're your own fast food chain.
Mind you, it's completely illegal.
Yeah. It's also like there was like not a lot of rules. People are like confused about what is
the Yes, for COVID, it's like you're really going to shut down a business during COVID. Like,
right. That was the good thing. It was like people were barbecuing on the side of the highway. Like, you know, like, times, yeah. Yeah. Like people were selling fish out of their car and we were just like, cool.
People this just is drinking in the streets. Like everything was just pushed outdoor. It was like Mardi Gras in like a lot of the areas. It like were restaurants. Insanity. Yeah, it was crazy.
It was crazy. And so, but what happened to me in Oceanside was like, we hit this momentum, right? Like we were like bombarded and business was like going so well. And, but when the word started spreading, like, hey, pizza lady on the side of the road makes really good pizza. The health department was like, like no way.
Too much buzz.
Yeah. And so basically they shut me down. Mm-hmm. They were like, you can't be here. If you're here again, we're going to fine you and you're not going to like the fine.
Shit.
And I was like, damn.
Fucking man.
I have a question though. If you're getting your car washed, do you eat the pizza before or after you get your car washed?
Hey, wait, while your car's getting washed.
Yeah,
getting
so you eat. Perfect. I was going to say, you can't get your car washed and then eat the pizza in the car. You fucked up
or
your car
you
wash.
Or you could just be in the car wash while, you know, like when you wait, just eat there and then
you get it on your way.
And then you clean it. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, eat it. And then
yeah, that's what people did. They waited for their car wash and they ate pizza. Yeah. And then we started getting people from the neighborhood who were not getting car washes, but coming by and pulling over. We got to a point where like we were selling out. Like I couldn't carry enough dough.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's so sick.
It was amazing though. Like people were running to the oven like, wait. As I was breaking down, they're like, wait, just one margarita. I was like, we have nothing, yeah. You know?
That must be an amazing feeling for you. Just people like literally running, sweating to ask for food as I'm breaking down. And it's like, no, I don't have anything left.
Yeah. Like, listen, like Rizzo's was very well established. Everybody knew it, right? It was around for 50 years. We were so crazy busy, right? But that wasn't mine. That wasn't something that I built. And so when I went to Oceanside and, you know, I built this concept, right? Like Josie's Pizza Bar. Like this was dough that I've worked on for many years. And like, this was me. Like basically I was giving you me in a box, right? And when I saw lines forming for what I was doing, for what I was selling, it was such a great feeling. Like I was in tears. I was like, I can't believe this is happening. And I was like, okay, I can't be a pop-up forever, right? And so I obviously didn't have enough money to do a storefront. But to be honest with you, after the pandemic, I was like, I don't really want to go back into a storefront. That is too risky for me.
Yeah.
You know, like I remember what it felt like to lose money. And I was like, I kind of like this lifestyle of like being outside.
Yeah.
Right. Essentially. And I always wanted to get into a food truck, but I never pulled the trigger on it. Right. Because like when you're a storefront owner, you're like, am I really going to get into a food truck? Like, I don't know.
Was your mind like, that's a step down, or you just didn't want to deal with like being on the go?
I'm going to be honest with you, at the time, yes.
Yeah.
It feels like a step down.
It does. I'm going to be honest. Like I used to never like saying it, but you know, I think a lot of storefront owners like me at the time, we don't respect mobile units, right? Like my employees used to ask me when I had a restaurant, like, what would you do if somebody like popped up in front of your restaurant, like with a truck? I was like, I'd probably deflate the tires or like, I don't know. Like they're not like me. They don't pay bills like me, you know? Like I was like, absolutely not. I pay rent. I pay real estate taxes.
Like, that's the thing. It's like, who are they? I have so much more like responsibilities and they get to just go wherever they want. And
yeah. Like, how is that fair? And you're going to pop in front of my restaurant? Like, right. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I got into the food truck that I realized like, oh wait, like there really is no difference, honestly, financially. Yeah. I don't know about anybody else, but like I'm in pizza, right? Like I don't do tacos or anything else. I need somewhere to prepare that. I need a commissary. Those commissaries are expensive. Right then and there, it's like $2,000-$3,000 a month. And then I have auto insurance and then I have general insurance and then I have business insurance. And so by the time I'm done, actually, my expenses are a little bit more than someone who owns a storefront.
Damn.
just auto alone is like $9,000 a year. And I was like, you know, I always wanted to do a food truck. Like, why not? Let me look into it. And so I did my research. I found a company who would build the truck. I found a company who would finance it. I came out of pocket a little bit. And then I was like, okay, where am I going with the truck? Right. And then I ended up in Florida. I'm like a nomad.
There is part of you that just goes and recharges in the sun. And
it
then
does, right?
Back.
Like, that's like a thing.
This
for
is
me.
A theme.
As I'm like talking to you guys about it, I'm like, oh my God, this is terrible.
You're probably like, damn, I think I gotta go back to Florida soon.
Yeah.
I know.
Oh my God.
Damn, it's that time.
I knew a few things, right? I wanted it to be authentic. I want to carry products that I can import from Italy, right? Out in Florida, I couldn't get certain things. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is not going to work. Like, I couldn't get, like, we carry aranciata, like Siciliana, like the drink. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get that in Florida. It was hard to get Parmigiano Reggiano from Italy. They were like, sorry, we don't have it in Florida, but the New York company has it. And I was like, I guess I'm going back to New York. You know, on my way back, a friend of mine was like, hey, we have a friend who has property in Glen Cove. And that's how I ended up in Glen Cove. She was like, I think you should go there. I think you'll do really well there. There is no wood fire. Try it out. Again, you're mobile. If it doesn't work, you get up and you move.
So how long have you been there now?
I've been there for 8 months.
So when are we going to Florida?
I feel like I need it.
Customers at the end of the day are probably the ultimate test, but do you find yourself, it seems like you're a little bit competitive. Are you competitive with other pizza places or not really?
Not really.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why. I think a lot of pizza places are competitive with each other, but I'll tell you why I kind of got out of that mentality. It's like, I know what I do and I do it very well. And I know the quality that I hold and I know the ingredients that I sell, right?
Yep.
And so for me, it's like, I know I'm giving a great product. I don't have to compete with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's face it, like pizzerias, they use like bag grated cheese and bag shredded cheese. And I've been there.
Bleached flour. And,
yeah. Like I've been there. I've done like the mediocre pizza just to get it out the door to make a dollar. That's not my concept now. So I know what I have is so special and so good that I'm just like, I keep my head down and I do my thing. And I think everything else just follows. And I just stick to that.
Yeah.
In terms of toppings, is there anywhere you wouldn't go with toppings? Or is there something that you were in the beginning of making pizza, you're like, I would never do that. And you're like more open to?
No. I like say I would never put pineapple on pizza. And I still don't put pineapple on pizza.
That's a big one. That one. That. I've never had it, but I won't do it.
I won't do it.
I won't, because what if I like it? I don't want to be
who likes pineapple. Yeah, exactly. Like special slices, that wasn't a thing.
No,
it wasn't. It was like pepperoni, mushrooms, onions, or regular. And it was
regular. Yeah. And a Sicilian.
Yeah. And now it's like, now I walk into a pizza place, they have 30 different specialty pies. I'm like,
it's
shit.
It's insane.
It's overwhelming.
Yeah, it is. It is. Listen, you go to Italy, they don't have crazy things on their pizza. But here in America, you can't really do that.
Yeah.
You know, like,
you got to play the game a little bit, play
nice.
You
got to play the game a little bit, right? And so, to what extent do you play it? And that's basically what I tell myself. It's like, all right, I'm going to use all these authentic products, but like, I won't cross the line and put pineapple.
Right.
I love
like
that.
It's finding the line of like creativity, but staying like true to yourself.
I'm not crossing that line. I love that.
Yeah. Right.
I was going to ask how would you describe like your pizza type? Like, it doesn't look typically New York style. I don't know if it's Neapolitan, but where would you sort
it's
it?
Funny. People ask me that all the time.
It's a bit of a hybrid.
It is. It's like, it's not Neapolitan because it's not like
soupy
and soggy in the middle. Right. And it's not like, I don't have like a huge crust and it's obviously not New York style. it's basically just, it's me. Like it's my creation. It's like, it's a hybrid. Yeah. Like you said,
before we go, last question for me is like, when you're looking back at the business you built, how do you want Josie's Pizza Bar to be remembered at the end of the day when you're retired and you hang it up? What would be some of the words that they would use to describe your pizza and your business?
I always say to my staff, like, you know, product and customer service are the two most important things, right? I always say, like, make everybody feel like they're home. Make everybody feel like they're welcome. I want you to eat in my truck and be like, this reminds you of home, you know? Yeah. We know people by their first names now. And a lot of people say like, oh, it reminds you of home. It reminds you of my mom's house. It reminds you of Brooklyn. It reminds me of my grandmother's house. I want people to love us. And I want, you know, Josie's Pizza Bar to be your spot, your neighborhood spot. And that's hard to do. And we're trying to do that. I don't want to just be like another place that you go get pizza.
I love how your story just comes like full circle.
Yeah.
From like when you first started and now where you are now, it's just like, it really is like an inspiring and awesome story.
Yeah, thank you.
We're happy to have you on Long Island.
Yes. I'm pissed we missed the nightclub a little bit.
Yeah. I wish we got the experience in the nightclub, but.
Oh my God, it was terrible.
Like Waleed said, you are an absolute badass. You're like the definition of grit. We wish you all the success. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, guys, it's the Warm Up Podcast. Shout out to Josie's Pizza Bar. If you haven't been there, go there. Amazing pizza. It's the Warm Up Podcast. Peace.
We've now reached our destination.
Thanks for listening to the Warm Up Podcast. For more TWU-related content, follow us on Instagram at the Warm Up Podcast. Subscribe to the Warm Up Podcast on YouTube and check out TWUmedia.com.